Starting on to the next segment here, which is going to be a discussion of the difference between basically cycles, which look for periodic lows and highs, and advanced decline T's, which only say that the rise time is has to match the period of the cash buildup phase, which is usually taken as a relatively weak period. But there's no particular reason to believe that the lows would ever have any particular cyclical significance. When I first wrote my book in 1973, I called it fractional cycle correlations, that the upside of the cycle is correlated to the down cycle, but there's no correlation between the cycles. The first chart we have is coming from one of my older publications. It's titled The Long-Range Advanced Decline T's, and it takes us from 66 up to 98, and it shows how you draw decline tops in the advanced decline line, which is the green lines down in the bottom plot. It also shows the 8-year cycle lows, which were kind of interesting at the time. And if I had the time, I'd probably continue that because it's also interesting. And I've drawn the T's with the left side, which encompasses the cash buildup phase, in red, and then the market rises in green. The green is supposed to be where you're making money. And I got the colors to change and so forth. I no longer have that program, so this is the images that I have, and at some point I'll duplicate it and so forth. But in any case, we're talking about symmetries here where we have a correlation in the T for between the market rise and the decline in the cash in the advanced decline line. But we're not talking about cyclicality in the sense of where the lows are. The next chart that follows is the big 1987 T, which was done in a different way. You're doing momentum in the S&P 500, but it's different than the mega T. And what it purports to show is that the 1987 crash set up the center post of a big T. Cash buildup was 12 and a half years, and it projected a top in the year 2000. That actually, I worked a lot on that. We'll be going into 2000, and that top was projected to be in June of 2000. In effect, what happened is that they had two tops. One was in March, which was the big one for the over-the-counter market, and then you had one that came later, which was in, I think, about September of 2000. That was for the S&P 500. I want to talk about those from the separately because, and I want to talk now, going to move on to the theoretical part. And before we look at these charts, you just want to start to think about what I'm going to say here, because it's talking about something that is a much higher level, which is the theory of symmetries. And so just put your thinking hat on that, and then we'll get to the charts and describe those aspects for you later. One of the important things about physics and most of science is that they deal greatly in symmetries. A good example of that is in the... which is from a chemical standpoint, it was if you view the creation of the real world as represented by what we see here, and you go back to a earlier time when energy hadn't condensed to form the planets and so forth, you would say that there were certain particles or entities or energy that were built up in this very high temperature cloud, and when it condensed out to form the materials that we see, for some reason which we don't know why, all matter was formed within a constraint that the electrical properties of all elements was such that the center of each atomic, each atom, had a positive charge of so much, and it was surrounded by a cloud of electrons, which had the same electrical charge, but of the opposite type. So, for example, hydrogen condensed out, it had a positive proton charge at the center. It could have had a neutron. We're not going to count that stuff. Okay, but it was surrounded in the normal state by a negative electron. So, and the reason it does that, presumably, is because the plus charge and the minus charge are opposites. They attract each other, and they kind of glue the whole thing together. it also has the advantage that when you get outside of the atom, it looks electrically neutral because you see a positive and you see a negative charge, and they kind of cancel out because they're opposites, so you don't see anything. Now, if you move up to something like hydrogen, move up to oxygen, I forget what the number is, 18 or 16 or 18, you have a certain number, whether it's 16 or 18, positive charges in the nucleus, and you have that same identical number of electrons on the outside. And this works for all the 92 elements that you form, which you see in the normal state. So this electrical charge balance is very important. It's very fundamental as to why energy and other things came out of a soup and they separated themselves into the various elements. When we say that is a natural phenomenon, we're not sure why it does it. It just is a symmetrical property on the electrical charge area. When we move to the chart, what I claim with my 1973 discovery was that there is a similar symmetry in that when the bind power, let me back up and say that this period here, going up from 82 to 98, is really coming from a big mega T. It was the 1966 to 82 cash buildup phase that produced an equal amount of time. And it was very, very strong because the situation was just ideal for that. So we say all that buying power that was built up in the pre-62 period had buying power, and it was sort of like floating around, and it was going to condense out, and when it condensed out, it went into time symmetrical T's, just as matter would have gone into time electrically symmetrical forms of atomic materials. And it's very unusual. There is no place in history that says that you will form time symmetrical trends, the green side of the T being the positive trend and the red side of the T being the negative trend. So you can't prove anything. The discovery that I made is unique in the sense that it's actually always true. It's just that nobody knows about it. And so I'll be devoting a considerable amount of time to go into this, so that it's properly credited to me in the future. The particular things that you see here are relatively dramatic because my whole career was I just sort of discovered this thing in the 72, published a booklet, which I will reproduce in part, which was just Xerox copies of a typewritten study. But I invented all of T-theory at that time. And then as I went through this journey, I see that T1 was basically okay. You went down for a couple of years, and you came up, you made the 72 top. And then when you went down to the 74 low, I could see that there was a small T because you went down for a couple of years. But the bigger T was basically 68 to 74, and that's why T2 grows to be big. And that's the one that I made all my money in. And I knew about the drop-off into the 82 low. And when we came up with T3, of course, as long as you figure that stuff out, you got very wealthy because of the T3 thing was just a monster on the upside. The other stuff in 87 was complicated, but if you decode that wasn't, you have plenty of time to decode this stuff. All the other stuff was self-evident, and so by the time you got to T number 10 and 11, you were really had believed that this whole thing is actually true because you'd seen it. Now, not enough people have seen that, so the movement that we're going forward to in T-theory is basically to track all this stuff down and reach some conclusions as to where the symmetry came from, because it's a time symmetry. We say it's an echo, and I'll just point out to you that it's very easy to say that the momentum peak that defines the left end of the T is a reflection off the low point, and because echoes tend to be time symmetrical on the time out to the time back, it has to be time symmetrical. And some people have started in the comments referring to that's an echo off of a low, meaning it's a new T, which is in a relatively appropriate way, in my opinion, to say that. But it's really a new science, and a lot of exploration will be done. And one of the reasons I'm publishing the book is because I have a lot of new ideas that are going to go into this. So let's just say that there is a similarity in the symmetry from the physical world, but it's translated over into time, and it deals with financial trends. The echoes take, I can tell you right now, the echo process takes care in the envelope bands that I will introduce in the next chart, and that's why they can stay so strong. They don't, echoes normally will dissipate, but they're trapped in the adaptive channels which I'm featuring in my next chart. So we're gonna go down that road. Now, when we're talking about time symmetries in this chart, there's another question which is brought up in the 1987 T. So we let's go to that next chart here, and what you see there is another. It's something that comes out of my history, and that basically is that if you ever lived through the this whole period of going up from 82 to 98, you come to this 87 crash, which was a horrible experience for everybody, and we see that in the next chart where I have the 1987 Great T. This time we're switching back to oscillators, which are like the volume oscillator, except it's the percentage change in the S&P 500. And you see there's a peak in 75, there's a low, because 87, the whole momentum thing went down into almost the most extraordinary oversold condition ever seen in history. It lasted 12 and a half years. So I started drawing T's in, and I started drawing these T's in 97 and 98, because the Mega T said there was a 98 top, but I was suspicious that this oversold condition had to be a T, therefore there had to be a top in mid 2000. That would turn out to be quite good, because I realized that by the time you made an oversold condition in 98, you had to come up. It was kind of a fruity thing, because it was the over-the-counter market that was really going gangbusters, but the market did go to new highs, and it worked out as a T. Well, so what am I talking about here? The funny thing about this T is that unless you were there, and some of the newer people aren't there, that 87 was the most frightening downside, fearful picture probably since the 1929 crash. There was another one in 62, but this one really was the granddaddy of all fearful downsides. At the same time, if you remember the dot-com revolution, and the apostle said that everybody believed that the web was going to be great forever and so forth, there was a offsetting greed cycle, which was really implemented in Enron and the high PE ratios, the highest PE ratios ever seen in the stock market, going into that 2000 peak. And it occurs to me that this T probably is suggesting, but not necessarily confirming, that there is a symmetry in the fear at the summit post of the T, 87, and the greed that exists at the right end of the T. There is nothing in T theory that, looking at the other chart, that has anything to do with a fear-greed cycle. It's just, it's a time cycle. But this one suggests that if you have the ultimate fear at the center post of the T, you might just possibly be getting the ultimate greed at the time that the symmetry calls for a top. Now, you're going to ask that, so what are you talking about here? What's this got to do with the present situation? Well, the answer is that in the long-range advanced decline T, which we have coming out of the late November, early March bottom, which we project is going up into the summer of 2010, people say, but of course, it's just a bear market rally. And that would be the conventional argument. But that decline that we had from June of 07 down to the November of 08 area is one of the scariest declines. I mean, I don't know whether it's as scary as the 87 crash, but before you say that rally that's going to be time symmetrical going up into the summer of 2010 is just some laboring, stupid bear market rally that everybody's going to laugh at, I would say the suggestion here that the fear greed symmetry is tied into the T's, which suggests that people are going to go crazy on the upside, or they might go crazy on the upside because there is a symmetry, number one. But number two is they see a way to get even out of it because they sold everything going down into the last low, and now they're going to try and double up, and greed will get the better of them. I wouldn't say that's not really a part of T-theory, but when somebody says to me that, you know, I think this is just a bear market rally, I'd be very suspicious that that's not going to be the case. Inherent in this observation is that if you really want to make a lot of money out of this rally, I don't think you want to be bearish, because just looking at my experience, this thing's got the makings of some kind of a buying panic to offset the rationality of the selling panic. If it turns out to be true, that's a whole new avenue for T-theory, in which you're seeing symmetries centered around the T, in which you might suspect that there's a way to measure the downside momentum and the fear cycle, the fear maximum, and then use that as a productive way to forecast the amplitude of the profitability of the rally into the right side of the tape. So that's something to keep important. I'll touch back on that one as I get more information, think about it more at all. Okay, so that's pretty much what the story on this segment is, and then I'll be back and we'll talk about the new chart, the new daily chart that's coming up.